Oh, sort of bad. Because, you know, you could take it out there in the world, but when Christians start to eat one another, that gets pretty bad and pretty serious. But through all that time, both of war and the sense of Vietnam, you know, the kind of war you can't see the enemy, where no one wears a uniform, but things just keep on happening. That kind of war, which was a war of nerves, and also the tensions of growing up, because you see, we didn't have a baby church anymore. We had a church that maybe was in its teens, and it had some problems that are a little bit parallel with a lot of the things that happen to us as we grow up, and as we sort out our feelings for one another, and as we step into new roles. So this last term has been camps and seminaries and seminary teaching by extension. We do one-to-one training for our leaders that are willing to be trained in seminary preparation so that they can minister. And mostly training lay people. We don't have very many well-trained men. We don't have very many people who have Bible school training, as you would recognize it here. And a lot of this, it takes a different kind of patience. But at the same time we were doing the camp work and the seminary work and things like that, we were still going into new areas. You know, we were in new towns this term where the gospel has never been preached. I sold Bibles in a little town called El Rincon. I offered the Bibles for sale, and that night they bought every single one, paid cash on the barrelhead too, because they hadn't had the chance to have the word, and they wanted it. And when I would recommend to them a book on the Christian home, the Christian family, they would buy it. And they would take it and they would read it. So even though we have the maturing church where nationals are beginning to take more and more of a part, we also had baby Christians. And they take a lot of time. You know what we become? We become mother, father, undertaker, marriage counseling. You know, we got into the family fights to the point where a couple times we almost got punched. And you have to be with them and be available to them 24 hours a day. They knew which window was ours, which window was our bedroom, and they knew where they could call us day and night. It's a different kind of thing there, because once they come to know Christ, they become part of your family, and you become part of their family in a real way, and they need you in a different way. But our biggest burden on this time of furlough is to try to get some of you to go back with us to Argentina, because we've been juggling so many jobs and so afraid to drop about three or four of them on our little heads that we're afraid to go back there right now unless we have people to share that ministry with us. Our job is not to go and do it ourselves, not 100%. Our job is to help other Argentines learn to do it and to do it in their own country and get to the point where they're not adolescents any longer but adults who are able to foot the bill and also be sending agencies to reach their own people and other people. We need people who are willing to learn Spanish, to give it all there is to give, to learn to know the people, and be willing to spend time to know the Argentine and to work with them. And I hope maybe, I see so many young people, that some of you will be joining us in the future working with CBFMS.
I'm going to try to move through these slides very quickly because I'd like to share some other things. After 5 years on the field, we need a little bit of time to share all that there is to say, but there'll be time for questions later. These three provinces of Jujuy, Salta, and Tucumán, that small one, is our province. Down below, outlined under Bolivia, under Paraguay, the country of Argentina in the northwest. I'm going to make a quick review through the years of the first term, since 1968 till 72 when we were home on furlough. The town of Famajá the Lord gave to us. And there you see something of the architecture, somewhat different than what we find in Millington. And getting to know the people and seeking to find out people prepared of the Lord for coming to know Him and follow Him was the task for the first 6 months. And then ministry through evangelistic efforts, through literature, through every possible means, to bring the first ones to the Lord. This evangelistic tent, which we used to start our campaign, we started in the tent, lovely summer weather in November of Argentina. We would start sometimes at 10 or 11 o'clock at night with our films, and the people will stay up very late in Argentina at that time because of the hot nights. And we had to move out of the tent on the wall, and project from way back so that you could see it for two blocks away. Some people not really desirous to get involved with the evangelicals were able to see, and through this means they came to the Lord. We could have never gotten closer. Baptizing my first man in a rather shallow river, I almost had to jump on him, but being true Baptists, we got him under there. And then through the years, the Lord has given us baptism after baptism, and sometimes with more cooperation on the part of the river. Summertime, we get the rains and a deeper baptismal tank. Then we came home from on furlough in 1972, leaving behind a group of about 30 believers and a piece of land that they were able to buy with their offerings. We watched that offering build slowly, and we only had half enough to buy the land. But by the time the papers were all done, the other half was in a year and a half later. Things move slowly sometimes. And then on furlough, as we are again this time, the chance to be in your churches, to see you and know you again, and to feel also the strength of the home church. For without the growing and strong home church, the work of foreign missions cannot continue. There's our daughter Maria Elena. She's a little bigger now, as you can see. And that Chevy that had to travel about 35,000 miles in deputation. In Fuller Seminary, for a time of sharpening the mind concerning missions and a better way of doing the job. And then back to Argentina to find a different climate. This kind of thing was happening day after day. Buses stopped along the road. All the people would have to get off and show their documents, put up their hands on the side of the bus while the soldiers or the policemen, whoever it was, were searching us. And this pickup, you can see the side of it there in front of our home, would be searched under the hood and under the car and in the car and out for guns and whatever might be carried by people that were against the government. This communist-led and inspired type of activity was practically costing the country, and practically came to the point of costing the country their democratic freedom. And then the folk to whom we had ministered the first term, the Lord showed us the need of returning to the same people, to the same area, where we've ministered again for another 5 years. 10 years in this area of Famayá, 20 miles south of the capital city of Tucumán. And a solution to a very serious problem. What do we do for a place to meet? These prefab chapels have served a very wonderful way to provide many of our congregations their first meeting place. About $600 in that prefab chapel, and yet a great place for the early years of the church's congregational meetings. Our pickup, some of you may remember our prayer letter when we wrote home and said that we lost one. Kind of a big thing to lose, but it disappeared one night and we never saw it again. And so it was necessary to purchase another pickup to keep the missionary on the road. This was all in some of that very uncertain period, and you can imagine our uncertain feelings for quite a while after that. Inside our little temple, our little chapel, and one of our fine teachers that the Lord gave us last term, a very well-qualified person. She'd had normal school training, never able to teach, and then she came to the Lord, and she's been a very precious addition in the church in Famayá. Our own home, of course, as missionary and pastor's homes often serve as a center of activity. Some of our young people from the church and our own boys and my wife's pies that are very essential, too, in the life of the missionary. Baptizing this term has been to add to the work, to bring in some of those people that the Lord knew were going to be significant in these last years. Andres Aguilar, there in the background, is really the deacon able to preach and to teach and carry some of the responsibility of that work. He's the man in charge, only 4 years old in the Lord, and so having very little training. His uncle there on the left, Andres Ferro, he's a barber out in the countryside. And so he's able to witness to the Lord with a razor in his hand. It's good to see the wives come to the Lord. When Mari came to the Lord sometime after her husband, and for a time she was resistant and not ready to cooperate, it's been thrilling to see her grow in the Lord, because Andres has felt the call of God to ministry and to preparation for Christian service. So I trust you'll remember this couple there right in the center, Andres and Mari, essential to the ongoing of the gospel in parts of Argentina, and that this man might be fully trained for the gospel ministry. Pray for him. The Lord has spoken to his heart many times concerning Christian service, and he knows he is called. This man too has a very specific part to play in the work of the Famaja Church. Only a year or so, if he has a year, maybe 6 months of schooling is all that he ever had. And yet last term he came to the Lord, and now he's responsible for building the temple there that we left behind. This young man was a disappointment through our first term and through most of the second term, Juan Albornoz. And yet in the last year, before we left the field, we were grateful for the Lord's bringing him back to us in a real way. He brought this girl to us, and she came to the Lord, and he had other plans. And of course, here's their wedding day. We were glad to see members of her family come to the Lord as well. And so we felt better about Juan and those years of disappointment, because now at least he's got someone to kind of keep him steady. Wedding time, the only wedding we had in our little church there. They've papered the walls and prepared it for special times. Out in the on the farm, we were invited for the special celebration. In our own little capilla and chapel, we enjoy these times of eating Argentine food and working together. We even had our television set there for the World Cup so we could watch Argentina win. And we weren't disappointed. And there you are, laying the foundation. My wife keeps telling me it's not base, as I call it, but that's sort of a transliteration of the Spanish use of the word. And they're building the foundation for the new temple that's to replace our little capilla. When we get about 55 people, we're overcrowded there, and so we need something bigger in order that we'll grow. They have found one of the reasons for churches not growing is that they get full. And once they're full, people begin to feel that there really isn't room. And so it's good to never let your church get more than 3/4 grown, I've heard. Pastor, you take that to heart, and by next term we'll expect to find another church. Farewell to the Gants on our way home, leaving behind the folk that have been our babies in the Lord over these last years. Another shot of that same group. See the palm trees and the bamboo in the background. We have a different climate. We're in citrus and sugar cane. And up in the mountains, we even have a different climate to share. I want to say something about this deacon, Fred Cassidy, from my home church. He led me to the Lord when I was a young boy, had an impact in my life over the years, and has prayed for me constantly, I'm sure, and has a burden for missions. And perhaps his burden for missions came to me. Fred has always written constantly to all of our missionaries, but we keep a rather lively correspondence going. And coming home in 1975 to be at my folks' 50th wedding anniversary, I said to Fred, I'm coming home. Why don't you come back to Argentina with me? And I got a hasty letter in return saying, I'm coming. I don't know how, but the Lord's going to send me there, I'm sure, and I'm going to try to get the funds together. And when I came up in June of 75, Fred was ready to go back and went back with me. I was thankful for his help. He helped me get a projector on the plane. The Argentine Airlines stewardess said, you can't bring that in here, and he didn't understand a word she said, so we got that projector down with us. Fred came to Argentina and watched the ministry that's been ours and shared in many of our churches across northwest Argentina. He brought his cowbells along to play, and he was, of course, a real blessing to the people. He preached wherever he had the opportunity, and we translated for him. And there he is in the midst of one of our small works along the river, some of the poor folk, in a happy hour, child evangelism type meeting, and our teacher Elba there. But you can see that Fred was in his glory, visiting with his spiritual grandchildren. And I am amazed at the way God turned a man already turned on for missions on even further. He certainly came home and turned the people of the Clayton Baptist Church on again for the things of the Lord and for missions. People began to send gifts down all the time. I almost had to say, stop back there. It's too much. You shouldn't keep doing this. Up in the mountains of Tucumán, Fred had a ministry, and here we were interrupted. The foreman came to take his men away in the middle of the service. That doesn't happen, perhaps, when you're indoors. Fred Cassidy with his grandchildren, years later, in the town of Famayá, the province of Tucumán in Argentina. Very first man that came to know the Lord in that town, Guillermo Ferro. I gave him a little party, and Fred has awakened at night, and he's written me saying, I wake up at night and I can't go back to sleep, and I see those faces before me that I came to know and love, And I get down on my knees and I pray for them. It's been a tremendous encouragement to us. And if I could have more deacons and laymen from the home churches down on the field to get that kind of vision, I'm sure it'll do something in our churches back home. Here's a young man that came to the Lord, and I'm going to share more about him later. Half-hour boy, and certainly he's been a blessing in the last year before we returned home. Dale Olson, the son of one of our missionaries, MK, working in Argentina as a MAC worker, Missionary Assistance Corps, went with me to an area up in Salta where we had a series of evangelistic meetings with films. And we had tremendous crowds. I wrote home about that. You remember the prayer letter saying in 8 nights we had something like 4,000 or 5,000 people. A real tremendous thing. These kids, mostly children I think, are sitting behind the screen. They found out that it comes right through and they get a mirror image. And they're just as happy back there as they are with a more crowded area. Some nights we must have had 1,000 people there at one time. I want to take you to another area of the work. You've been talking something of Famajá, which is the church, the center emphasis of our work. And now in the mountains of Tucumán, we have a work that we've been praying about. We left the burden with you when we were here before. And the Lord is touching hearts one by one there in the mountains. Here's a typical Indian woman in the mountains. And that tapestry that she's made, you can find back on the table. We came to know the folk in this area. And in this wedding, we helped back years ago when we were planning to live in the area, planning to have a small home, adobe home for camp and for getting away from the heat. And this young man, the groom, came to know the Lord some years afterward. That lovely area of El Mojar in the valley of Tafí, Tucumán, 6,500 feet altitude, very lovely temperature when it's just rather boiling down below. We enjoy the cool up here for our time of vacation. Across the valley, the other end of the valley is the town of Tafí del Valle in Argentina. That's a famous tourist area. And we've been seeking to plant the seed for future work there someday. There's Elaine with the pickup. You see our loudspeakers on the top. One evening here we were showing films and the priest wanted to have an outdoor mass. And they had to interrupt us, or they wanted to, and we said, give us 10 more minutes. And so we made the priest wait for 10 minutes while we were finishing up the film. This little rock room serves as our chapel in El Mojar as we seek to carry the burden here, the witness, until in the years to come, we trust, there will be a lasting work. Here's a man alongside of Pastor. Pastor is the first young fellow there, the first one to come to the Lord. And then his father-in-law, suffering with the problem of alcoholism, through a tract and through his encouragement, gave his heart finally to the Lord. He resisted the gospel for many years. We'll be speaking to you in just a bit more about David. He's a blacksmith. He shoes the folks' horses from all over the valley. They come for 40 miles, some of them, to have their horses shoed. And David has a tremendous way about him, a tremendous witness, and he gets the word across. They're not listening too well yet. But we really believe that David's going to be used. Pray for him. I trust the picture will help you to remember this man and his need. He has very little in the Lord. He's only been a Christian a few years. He reads the word every time he sips his mate. Every time he has his tea, and he does that 4 or 5 times a day. So you pray for him that the word will stick and that he'll use it. Our little home there that's become our camp and used to be a place of rest. Now, because of the work there, it isn't so much a restful center. There you see the background, the Andes Mountains and the snow in the middle of the summertime. Little retreat that we had with the men. Then there's the time for visiting the kids. Our boys and our Maria Elena have been away from us much of the time, and my wife and I have felt like newlyweds, except that too many years to feel quite like that. Visiting Tambo Missionary Children's School in Bolivia, the New Tribes Mission School. Our children were away 4 months at a time, and then we would try to get in at least once during the year. Thankful for the gifts of God's people beyond the regular giving that made possible that kind of a trip, rather costly to go up and to visit, and your gifts have been used in that way. Our own missionary children's school in Cerrillos, Salta is just about 200 miles away, and so it's quite close, and our Maria Elena we can see every 3 weeks. Gas has gotten up to $1.20, and it's not been always easy. $1.20 a gallon is a little high on with our pickup, but every 9 weeks she would be home for 10 days, and then back to school, and then Christmas vacation, and so on through the year. This is one of our microwave ovens in Argentina. Ladies are getting ready for cooking for the camp, for the men, and putting the bread in. Our Rio Lozano camp in Jujuy is our Baptist camp for all of North Argentina. It's had a very special ministry of men's and women's retreats and Bible conferences during the summertime and youth camps. We started with nothing, and now we've added on. We have a kitchen. We have a nice area for eating, dormitories for the folk to sleep, and a nice chapel, which I don't happen to have in the slides. And you can get a good view of our evangelistic tent. That is, we have two of these tents that are used all across the Northwest for the campaigns that we have. The mountains of Jujuy, there in the background. Some of our folk from Famaya and Point South. Another area that we do together, I'm trying to show you the local churches, and then the associational work, not only camp work, but our seminary, the Baptist Seminary of Tucumán, is something that our churches do together. This is a national seminary, supported by the nationals. A few gifts have come from North America to help with some building, to help with books, but generally it's supported by our national churches. One of our young men, or at least a man who married one of our girls, and is now acting as a pastor in a province south of us, Catamarca, of Argentina. Upper story for dormitories for married couples, and the kitchen down below. Patio being used for graduation. In front of the seminary, Marcos Paz 1776. Any patriotic American will remember the address. Seminary to train our men in the resident seminary, and then to be the basis too of our extension seminary classes all over the Northwest. I've had the joy of teaching pastoral counseling. It's been a blessing in my ministry, and I trust a help in these young men's ministry as they go out to serve the Lord in very distinct parts of Argentina. Fellows more of an Indian background, one of them a fellow from the Quechua area, and the other of the Guarani people. Fred Cassidy again in the midst of our seminary. He was all over Argentina, taking part wherever he could and enjoying the work that the missionaries are doing. One of our men has been a professor of seminary, a civil engineer, Karim Morcos. It's been a blessing in my own life. This man came to the Lord because of a son sick with polio. And just a year ago, he lost a son, his oldest son, 19 years old of cancer. God has used this man, and I believe God is maturing him in a way that he will be greatly used in the years to come. Teaches in our seminary. Our missionaries in Tucumán, there are other provinces, of course, south than Jujuy, but these are the ones that we've been working with. And this couple, I would like you to remember. They're responsible now for their churches and our three. So pray for them, because on their shoulders has been cast our labor and extra work. Here we are celebrating their 25th anniversary. They're not just young kids. They've been on the field a time. Pray for Jim and Carolyn Haley in reference to Argentina and our work, because they're doing the work that we left behind. Now I want to close these slides with reference to this couple, Pastor Hector Nieva and his wife Pochola, the only seminary-trained pastor in 142 towns and cities outside the capital city of Tucumán. There's about 550 people in this area. And yet he's the only, in fact, he's really the only seminary-trained pastor working in the whole of the province. In every case, we depend on deacons and lay leaders or missionaries. We're desperately short of missionaries, and we're desperately short of national leaders. Pray the Lord of the harvest that he'll send forth laborers into his harvest field.
They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus was saying to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send him out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the evil spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside. And the people went out to see what had happened. Then they came to Jesus. They saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man, and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy upon you." So the man went away and began to tell in Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. May God write these words on our heart. Are you looking?
All right. Now I feel like I'm out in the open air. In that he came to do good, and he did good, and he changed lives, and they told him to go. We find this experience so common in among the people that we work with because they can't figure out our motives. We've often been asked, "How much is the U.S. government paying you to come here?" And when that doesn't work, they say, "How much is the Argentine government paying to get you here?" Certainly, we have experienced that, and we expect that from those that aren't the Lord's until they come to know him. But the relationship that this man had to Jesus as he came to him, and then asked that he might go with Jesus, that he might learn at his feet and be like the other disciples, Jesus denied. And he said, "Vete a tu casa y a los tuyos." Go home to your house and to your own. And to each of us, he gives that ministry. It's a thrill to see the way the Lord takes these new babes and uses them in their homes and in their environments. And they suffer often. But then the thrill of seeing others come to the Lord. I just wanted in these last minutes to share with you of Jacinto, that young half-Arab boy by his bicycle that you saw on the slide. He came to us very troubled, bothered by what he felt were demons, and for all we know it was. He couldn't sleep at night. He had all sorts of problems, things on top of the roof that were bothering him. And one of our young men, that same Juan that had let us down for so many years, told him that he needed to come to the Lord, and if he'd give his life to Christ, he'd find victory over those things. And he came to our meeting with the express purpose of giving his heart to Christ. And Jacinto's coming to the Lord brought really, well, it was one of those answers, "Lord, do you really want us here? What are we here for? Show us some signs." And the Lord sent us Jacinto. Jacinto didn't tell us all of the things in his life. But what we didn't know was that he lived with his brother and sister-in-law, and he hadn't spoken to his sister-in-law for 8 years. I don't know what the reason was. He never shared. But a few days after Jacinto's salvation, there came to our gate his sister-in-law. And she said, "I'm Jacinto's sister-in-law. I don't know what has happened in his life, but I want to know about it." Jacinto had gone to her, and he had reconciled the past and overcome the difficulty, and in tears pleaded that he might be forgiven and that they might be restored in their relationship. And she came into our home and sat down with my wife and I, and in that moment in that time of conversation, when she understood what had happened in his heart, she received the Lord as well. And that's what the verse says there. It says, you go home and tell them the great things that God is doing. And no missionary could stand before a congregation like you who have prayed and who have given without giving the glory to God. He's working in marvelous ways in spite of us. And we're thrilled to see those gems of his grace and of his power, like Jacinto. Through Jacinto, a little area was evangelized. He was the major evangelist, preparing hearts. And then we had a campaign that he prepared. And we saw families come to the Lord. That's a thrill. And it's a thrill to report it to you people now, that you might have some of our joy in the ministry that we share with you out there in Argentina. I'm going to ask my wife to come up, and Pastor's going to moderate some questions if you have some this evening.
One of the best times, I believe, is when we have a chance to throw the questions at our guests. And who be the first to pitch one in here? I scared you. You want coffee? Okay, Joanne.
I've been working as a rose expert. I helped that older man to start a rose farm. He had a rose farm, but I helped him collect about 85 varieties. We tell them what kind of seed to use and how to take care of things, and we do a lot of that on the side. But agriculture was a long time back, but I don't believe God wastes anything that's in your life. Every bit of experience, you find a way to use for him.
Somebody else, over here. George.
Well, they wonder about that peanut farmer we have in the White House, but Argentina has always been very separate from the rest of Latin America, very much oriented towards Europe, and not very much openly favorable to the United States. They like all of the greenbacks they can get, but they have not been a country that cares to relate to the United States a great deal. The present president of Argentina, the military president, seems to be a man very much inclined to favor the United States. A good man, I believe, a man that's brought back the discipline to the country that it certainly needed, a very austere man, and a man that has had a tremendous effect in the life of the people. And I think if he had his way, he would try to bring more American influence and allow more of that. But he has to cope with Argentine and the Argentine people, who have been oriented more towards Germany and to other parts of Europe than to the United States.
Anyone else? Yes, Alice?
What is the staple food of the United States?
Beefsteak, every day. Vegetable? Well, we have celery and lettuce, and we have, what's that thing we have every day that's always available?
Swiss chard,
every single day. It seems that's the only thing. Then they put it in soup, and they have it in this and that, and Yes, string beans, the other type of beans, they eat beefsteak instead of beans, so they don't know about baked beans, you know, instead of baked beans. But for 60 cents a pound for filet, you know, you really can't go too wrong eating beefsteak. Filet, incidentally, is not the best tasting beef. Argentines prefer other slices.
Judy.
Evangelical groups that are politically radical.
In the area where we're working, we're not bothered by any other groups, and that includes other mission boards. We're in an area where nobody else has gone. We're up in the backwoods. So we're not stumbling over too many other groups, and we just about have nobody working with the students. In fact, you remember this morning I was speaking to the teenagers, and I was telling them about the need for more missionary personnel. And that's another job description that I didn't include, but would be very necessary in Argentina. Someone to work with the University of Tucumán and spend time with the students. We can't do that on top of the other things we're doing now.
I would say that most of the radical political thinking people are the Roman Catholics in this third world group. And there are some radical evangelicals. We use the word evangelical in Argentina for all Protestants, so sometimes the word has to be clarified. But there are some evangelicals of the more liberal sort that are getting involved in this sort of thing. What's it called? Joel's paper there in
The new
revolutionary theology, you know.
Theology of liberation.
But that's more in the liberal camps. The evangelicals, the conservative evangelicals, biblical ones, have generally tried to avoid this sort of thing in Argentina. You want to tell them about that?
Climate's just like Florida. Hot, sugar cane. Hot, and hotter. We have about 9 months of summer and about 3 months of what you might call spring or fall, but just about no killing frost, so we can have plants grow year-round.
I think it's 11 months of summer and 1 month of spring. Yes.
You indicated that there was not a other working in the same area that you are, but that you also the Roman Catholic Church, the Indian villages, is there resistance there by tribal leaders?
I would say the resistance among the Indian people in the mountains is mostly due to their ignorance and their fear of something new that's coming in. Generally, they're nothing in their faith. They often have drifted away from even a true Catholic belief to more of a paganism, so common, the Cristo paganism, as it's spoken of in Argentina, all of Latin America, quite a mixture, and you can't tell where the Christianity, in quotes, it begins and where it ends. The folk, the bigger cities like Buenos Aires, of course, have been open to the gospel for many years. Folk came from England to help build the railroads way back in the 1860s and 70s and brought the gospel and started little chapels, brethren especially at that time. And the city areas, these bigger city areas, have quite a gospel witness. This has not penetrated to the interior. We find that people that go off to the big city areas because of the need for work return with a very open attitude, and we can get to them. But those who've been in the same towns for all of their lives are still very resistant. And you have to find a way of breaking through. I still think that, you know, they're not closed. Argentina is not known as an open area. We're not seeing a movement to the Lord quite like Brazil. But we are seeing people respond for those who have patience. I keep telling folk here at home that the greatest mission field we have in the States are among our Roman Catholic friends who are just Roman Catholic by tradition. And say, because their father was Italian or Irish, or something like that, they're Catholics, but have no real convictions. The greatest mission field in the States. And that's why we're in Argentina as well, you know. They're all Roman Catholics, 90% of them. And unless we win them, we really don't have a mission field. But we feel that the Lord gives us opportunities, and we seek to know better ways of breaking through those sort of artificial barriers that seem to be lifted up so high. But there are answers.
We speak Spanish.
One of our most effective ministries in Argentina has been through films. I don't know if any of you have ever seen the Life of Christ series by Cathedral, one of the most beautiful series of the Life of Christ, and very, very biblical, filled with the Bible. And we find that is very well accepted by Catholic people. We have one film called The Birth of Jesus that shows the Virgin Mary, and people, they've seen it, some of them, 10 and 20 times, and it's their favorite film. We have a series of 13. And that there's no real preaching in this. It just presents the gospel narratives, and in beautiful color, done by professional artists and actors. And the opportunity afterward to preach on top of this and to explain the gospel is really tremendous. And we're still finding that film evangelism is the greatest opportunity that we have, because we can draw a crowd of 300 or 400 quite easily. And then to be able to signal out those few that may be thinking in these areas and concerned about their souls, give us the opportunity to follow that through to laying the foundations.
You know, we've been available to them for the last 10 years. They know where we are. We just keep on doing the same thing. We do all of our shopping, not the way you do, you know. At the supermarket, we walk from one store to the other. The meat store sells meat. The bread store sells bread. The vegetable store sells vegetables. Nothing comes canned and packaged. Well, if the canned goods don't taste very well, we have no frozen food. So you spend a lot of time doing things that you people don't even do. You know, you want to go to the bank, you have to stay on a line for half an hour. You want to go to the post office, it's the same thing. So we're available to them. We say hello to our neighbors, and we wait for them, after knowing what we're there for them to raise the questions, and they come to us by day and by night. A lot of people are like Nicodemus. They wait till after the sun goes down at night, and they come by and start with their questions. But just being in the one town long enough so that they knew what we stood for, also our children were very useful. And they made friends on every level of the society, from the garbage men and their dogs right up to the governor, or the man who is the governor in our town, the one who is
the mayor,
I guess. And their friends, of course, know why we're there, but they can approach the kids more easily than the grown-ups sometimes.
When you showed the film, would there be any participation by the Argentine Christians in the showing? What would they do? Would they be active and inviting? Would they penetrate the crowd?
Yeah, in the beginning, of course, we're working pretty much alone. We had to use our maid sometimes, my wife, to help put up a tent because the people refused to identify, you know, with us. But as we're able to add them, of course, they're there with literature, and they're there to bring their friends. And of course, I think this is one of the most important things, is when the evangelistic effort of whatever type it might be is the believers bringing their friends and the people they have been witnessing to. I think there's where we see permanent fruit. That's, I think, is true at home. You know, it's one thing to have an evangelistic evening service or evangelistic meetings and preach to all Christians. That sounds very strange, but that happens in America all the time, you know. And it can even happen on the mission field, where our believers are gathered and we have an evangelistic effort, and they're all believers. So we do work with them a great deal to have them pulling in these folk, their friends or neighbors, and I think that's when evangelism becomes a success. Many times our evangelistic efforts are very risky things, you know. We don't know what they're going to throw at us. Sometimes we go off into an area that has never heard the gospel, and we take it. We take it in our truck and the film and the power plant, and we set it up. We get permission to, we convince them they're going to see something good. We don't tell them too much, and we show a series of films on the life of Christ, and we may not say a word to them. Just, we'll be back tomorrow with another one. Would you like us to come? And they say, yeah, come back. We'll have our friends here. And that time we explain a little bit of what the Bible is, and we offer it to them, and some of them will come and buy it. Sowing the seed at first. Of course, it all depends on where they are, whether they've ever heard before. And it's different at every stage. Of course, when we have our believers and when they're leading, of course, when we left many of the campaigns, we were trying to turn over to them. They were running them. We were just sort of backing them up. And that's when it's theirs. That's when it can continue.
Must you get permission from the local
authority? Our first term was a much more happy experience in that area. We didn't ask anyone. We just did it. And there was no real problems. Since these problems with extremist groups, the military have had to get very, very touchy, tense. They're afraid of things, afraid of something happening, and so we've had to get permission from the police, and it has put some limits on our activities, especially in open air things, where we have temples, where we have our own churches. Argentina has freedom of religion, and therefore we're allowed to do that. But where we're doing this in outreach in new areas, it's sometimes we have problems with the mayor, the local mayor, or through the priest. We have problems with the police, and it's not always easy. We have been refused. We have to keep going back and try to find a friend, and eventually we come through.
We have a public school system, again, probably mostly controlled by the Catholic Church. Anything the priest doesn't like,